If you listen to my Trump assassination conspiracy part one episode, then you already know we're living in a weird timeline right now. Is it just another regular old politics as usual election year full of chaos? Or are we looking at something more serious? Are we looking at the end of the world? Is Trump the Antichrist manifesting before our eyes, fulfilling the prophecies from the Bible? Is AI toying with our reality by causing the major power outage the day after the RNC speeches, which gave us loads of symbolic confirmation of ideas presented in part one? Stay tuned as we unpack all of this and try to clear the fog of the Trump conspiracy. My name is Isaac Weishaupt. You're listening to the Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture Podcast. Today we've got the July bonus episode only for the supporter feeds. We're going to go deeper down the rabbit holes of the Trump assassination conspiracy, continuing from part one. Twilight language explanation from James Shelby Downard's King Kill 33. I decided I've got to go further and trying to discuss what he was talking about, because a lot of the ideas that we presented in part one turns out. We're going to talk about Trump's connection to Aleister Crowley and the Hellfire Club, Hulk Hogan's coded message at his RNC speech, BlackRock's symbol of 93 and 66 ties again to Trump, Ghislaine Maxwell, Jeffrey Epstein, the worship of Apollo, and we revisit already one of Alex Jones' predictions. I mean, it kind of came true. Cyber attacks. And then we ask the question, is AI pushing us into the apocalypse? Is this happening? Join along. Now, if you are a free feed loser, then you're not going to hear the whole episode. You're going to catch a little preview, and you're going to want more. You're going to want the whole thing. If you're already on the supporter feeds, thank you. You're supporting the show. You make it happen. You already know the deal. And if you're not on the supporter feeds, I've got three options. You know the deal. Patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher is the one I steer everybody towards because that's the most popular. You get to comment, and I interact in the comments for each episode, all that stuff. The easiest one is Apple Podcast Premium. You mash the button and you're in. Simple. And then you've got the VIP section. You got to copy and paste an RSS feed. And if you're able to do that and you don't mind jumping through a little hoop or two, you can get that for the cheapest. And right now I've got an 80% off coupon code for the VIP section. 80% off your first month. Links are in the show notes. You already know that. Or just go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, hit the VIP tab up top, find it. You're smart people. You can figure it out. Also, housekeeping, I got a lot of messages from the part one episode. I mentioned the video, and a lot of people ask me questions about this. They say, look, I'm already on Patreon. Where's the video? Here's the deal. To make this a short explanation, I started all this so many years ago, all right? And the way it worked is I had to build tiers into my Patreon. And long story short, the way it panned out from censorship and getting kicked off of YouTube and Vimeo and all that, tier one gets you the audio version of the podcast. Tier two gets you the video version as well. The video version is me being a talking head. I upload it to Rumble on unlisted private ad-free feeds. And if you're a tier two member on VIP section or Patreon, then you get access to that video. It's on a link. I have an index full of links. And if you're already on one of those and you're like, well, where the heck do I find it? On every episode show notes, I put a link to the tier two video index. And when you're logged in, you just click the link. It'll take you to you. Every time you see a new episode, just assume the video version's already up. Sometimes it takes a little bit to process and it shows up 30 minutes later, maybe. But usually it's all ready to go. You just click that video index link. And you'll find the video. I put all the private links on for the index of every episode, okay? For people asking me. And I know it sucks, right? It's just how it evolved. The socialist in me wants to make everything available for the $5. But the capitalist in me knows it doesn't make sense to give all the work away, especially because the videos are clearly, by far and large, the highest source of drama in my life. If you ask me, I would get rid of the videos and just be like, you're getting audio only, boom, done. The video is such a thing. It's a thing. Anyway, let's get into it. Twilight language. We talked about this in part one. It's becoming more relevant. It's manifesting. So I want to revisit James Shelby Downard's King Kill 33 book. I'm going to reread some parts that we talked about in part one. I'm going to add more. I'm going to clarify it a little bit more, right? because I didn't go deep in it because I didn't expect it to manifest in the way that it did. So let's go to Downard himself, a legend in the world of synchro mysticism. Long dead. He's been gone a while. This is the guy who's been doing this since, I think, like the 60s or 70s. The secret government plays on Americans' apathy to make sure we don't revolt through episodic revelations of the same type to shun them into inaction, meaning we're the sheep. All right? They have their plans, and they execute them, much like the techniques of the assassins in every other secret society. It doesn't really matter. There's no morality or ethics. That's what the whole idea of the knowledge of good and evil, that kind of thing. The game plan. He says, the endeavor is to bring about syncretism in opposing principles of a mystic power and to green Israel, rebuild the Temple of Solomon, and establish a one-world government. If you recall, we did a couple episodes talking about this exact idea of rebuilding the Temple of Solomon. This is where a lot of the forces line up. The occult-type folks, a la Aleister Crowley's dispensationalist background from John Nelson Darby, who invented the idea of a rapture and how man can somehow trigger the second coming of Christ, which is nonsense, of course. But that doesn't matter. Whether or not it's true, it doesn't matter. This is what these people believe, okay? So you've got this sort of occult perspective of trying to usher in the end of the world, and then you've got this strange, weird, occult, Christian, evangelical angle. And of course, not every evangelical, of course, not every Christian. I'm just saying, like, there's forces here, okay? And they're trying to rebuild the Temple of Solomon, and they're trying to usher in the end of the world through ritual, through psychodrama. And we don't get the truth along the way. We don't get the truth as Americans at all. We get two extreme parties with two extreme worldviews that most people don't subscribe to. And he says, there is no happy last-minute rescue awaiting just around tomorrow because Americans do not have the truth about things with which to rally. And most just want money, which would enable them to get the things they've been told that they should and must have. We talked about this idea years ago, like in 2017, I did a three-parter on Edward Bernays, the king of propaganda, and how the corporations were using ideas of Carl Jung and Freud, and Edward Bernays was capitalizing on this by using propaganda to get us interested in certain financial things. You know, that's where the idea of a diamond ring comes from. It's where the idea of having bacon and eggs for breakfast comes from. He got women to start smoking. They called it torches of freedom. Everything's propaganda. It's been smoke and mirrors for 100 years. Nothing's changed. I assure you of that. He blames the free... Also, you'll notice the tonal difference in part two versus part one. Part one, you caught me in the morning, low T Isaac. Part two, you're getting high T Isaac. Get ready for that. I'm not taking no shorts, no losses today. He blames the Freemasons. He says most of the Freemasons are unaware of the Masonic cryptocracy. Again, levels within levels, right? Not every... You know, like I always say, most Freemasons, they just want to serve pancakes and hang out with a fraternal brotherhood. But then you've got the upper echelon, your 33rd degrees, your inner chamber, the initiates that got the inner, best described through Eyes Wide Shut. You know, Tom Cruise shows up to the orgy house. He's having a good time, gives him the password of Fidelio. Then they're like, hey, who's this outsider sneaking in here? They pull him in. They say, what's the password? He's like, Fidelio. And they say, no, bro. I want the password for the house, not admittance, meaning there's two passwords. There's two levels, and he ain't in it. It's two clubs. He says these higher Masons, the cryptocracy, the Illuminati, as we would say today, they use a science of names to encode rituals, like fertility and death symbolism. That's why I was harping so heavy in part one about how this is part of a Brotherhood of Death initiation ritual for Drumpf. And the killing of the king ritual that JFK was subjected to, he talked, because that's what King Kill 33 is entirely about. It's about JFK and how it was an assassination and a psychodrama ritual conducted by this cryptocracy. And he says that this idea is suppressed because it would expose too much of the mysticism of the Freemasons, and they don't want anyone to know their influence on the political world. and everything would fall apart. Distrust would spread, and so on. And then he talks about, in the first section, that's the introduction. In the first section of the book, he talks about the Hellfire Club. The first section, because it's apparently very important in the JFK story. I'm going to read you right from the book. Hellfire Club was a society of partiers who had sex orgies, political agitation, and conspiracy. You got all that? Sex orgies, political agitation, and conspiracy. They sought destruction of the Catholic Church. All the leaders of British government were members, as was Benjamin Franklin, who published the first Masonic book in the United States of America. Again, I don't want to pick too hard on the Trump or QAnon MAGA crowd, but their whole fantasy of the Founding Fathers being Christians is a complete smokescreen of hypnosis. Read a book, folks. You can do it. It's not true. Did they espouse some Christian ideas? Sure, yeah. There's ideas presented there. They weren't entirely like, oh, every aspect of Christianity is wrong. But look at Thomas Paine's Age of Reason, the Thomas Jefferson Bible. I think we talked about this in part one. I won't keep beating you up over the head with it. And it's okay. It's fine. It's fine. And that's what's beautiful about America. America's great. I got my American Patriot shirt on today. All right? It's okay. That's the beauty of our country. You're allowed to have the freedom of religion. You can believe it or not. Isn't that great? Why do we insist other people believe what we believe? Why do we insist our more morality everyone needs to follow? No, we don't do that here. You want a authoritarian theocracy? There's places in other countries that do that. Go over there. Ben Franklin and the Hellfire founder Francis Dashwood wrote a prayer book that became the basis of American Protestant church prayers. See how it infiltrates, right? That's why, as an Orthodox Christian, we have a heavy reliance on tradition. We don't change much because there's influences trying to weasel their way in, satanic influences. There was a book called the Franklin Dispenser Prayer Book that was a reference to Francis Dashwood, who went by the name Lord Le Dispenser. They always have secret names. Any, you know, secret society group. In part one, we talked about Trump's secret names. He's got secret names too. His dad had secret names, Mr. Green. I mean, it's a practice, right? They wrote this book at West Wycombe, where sex magic rituals were taking place. Dashwood would dig a huge cave on this estate for the underground sex magic rituals. I've read elsewhere that it's under churches as well. Soil from this dig was used to build a road to Brunei University, where there is a cybernetic department, which is all about AI or machine intelligence. It's human cooperations with machines. And this is why we talk about Dannard. He knew what was up. He knew what was up. And then he goes on, he says, there's a woman who went by the name Miss Chudley, and she was the harlot used in rituals. Some of this is, I should explain. Some of what I'm reading to you is my personal notes. Some of it is quotes from his book. So it's kind of a mix mash of me writing down the quotes and then me providing my, I don't know, thoughts and insight on it. So if you're looking for exact quotes from what I'm saying, you might not find it in King Kill 33, but you're going to find some of this in there. Okay. A woman who went by the name Miss Chudley, she was the Whore of Babylon. She was the harlot used in these rituals. And again, she needed a secret name, and it was concealment, which is what the Bavarian Illuminati, it's what the Freemasons all do. Chudley was the name of a town, and she was called the Woman of Common Property, all right? And then he talks about Harpocrates, the Greek god of secrecy, right? Everything's got to be done in secret, and so on. And he proceeds to break down the Whore of Babylon, sexual geometry, Shakespearean Macbeth, and so on, right? Like I said on part one, I'll do a full breakdown on King Kill 33 someday here. I was intending for it to be part of the Twin Peaks analysis when I wrap up season 3. I was planning on doing it much later. I don't know. Things are getting kind of red hot right now, so we'll see. But pay attention to everything I've said so far, all right? About Hellfire and secret names and all these groups and AI, that cybernetic department, because it's going to come up throughout this whole episode. Now, in part one, we talked about Steve Jackson's Illuminati card. Look, to be fair, to put my rational hat on, the Steve Jackson Illuminati card deck is massive. It's not just a single deck of cards. I mean, I don't know how many cards. I should look that up. It's a lot of cards. How many cards in Steve Jackson Illuminati deck? I think there's multiple decks and multiple boxes. It says here, first result, 409 card set. So yes, it's possible that it's like The Simpsons. How many hundreds of episodes do they have? Yes, sometimes these things are going to happen in reality. So let's not try to stretch too hard. I did, in my research, find they made a card, I believe it was all from 1994, of a slice of pizza, which I thought was interesting. But anyway, part one, we talked about a card that said enough is enough, and it talked about snipers, and it had a guy look like Trump, and it had like the looked like a bullet zinging by his face, which was kind of on the nose, right? Well, when you watch, I'm trying to think of what else we talked about. We talked about Diddy, right? Because Diddy, all of a sudden, you know, Diddy has a lot of ties to Epstein operations, and we've been postulating that he's further connected with all of these secret groups than we know. And wouldn't you know it, now that this massive event took place, all of a sudden Diddy's off the hook not off the hook, but like out of the headlines, right? And I made note that the first statement he made after all these accusations, he said, enough is enough. That's what Diddy said. And I thought, well, that's interesting. That's what the card is, right? Well, wouldn't you know it, last night at the RNC, I watched Hulk Hogan, one of my childhood heroes. He tears his shirt off. He goes by a secret name too, because that's not his real name. His real name's like Terry. I don't even know his real name. He tears his shirt off. I'm gonna play the clip for you, and he talks about how they tried to kill Donald Trump. Who's they, Hawk? As far as I knew, like officially, it's just the one dude on the roof, right? The lone wolf guy. So what are we saying here? And he says they tried to kill Trump, and listen to what he says. Listen to his reaction.
And last week, when they took a shot at my hero, and they tried to kill the next president of the United States, enough was enough.
Sean Diddy Combs speaks out against assault allegations being made against him. The music mogul tells E! News in a statement, enough is enough. For the last couple of weeks, I have sat silently and watched people try to assassinate my character.
Hawkster said enough was enough. Just like the Illuminati card, just like Diddy. Now, what does all that mean? I think it's part of the Twilight language. I don't think that Hulk Hogan was given a cue card and was like, hey, you know, we got this deck of cards and we need you to say this word. Or maybe, right? But I think it's more likely that influences, otherworldly influences, reverberate and reflect a lot of these ideas. All right. And I'll kind of elaborate that in the conclusion. Now, what's ironic is that if you're on the free feed, at the end of part one of the Trump conspiracy episode I just did, I play a promo clip of a guy on Fiverr who can do the Hulk Hogan and Macho Man voices. And I put it on the end of episodes every now and then. It's to plug the supporter feeds, you know. And ironically, I put the Hulk Hogan one at the end of that episode. I thought that was strange. At the time, I didn't even know Hulk Hogan was going to be at the RNC. But the humor here is the one of, you know, my red pill daddies told me politics is all for show and it's basically WWE wrestling. All right. And here we come to realization. I mean, it couldn't be more on the nose. Politics is wrestling. The two worlds are basically the same. You got these guys who come out on stage talk about, oh, I'm going to beat this guy up and he's terrible and I hate him. Even in UFC, you see, you know, Dana White was doing a thing. And I like Dana White too. But he was giving a little speech. I haven't seen it yet. But everything is to sell tickets and get attention. because it's much more interesting, right? You can't have these two guys come out and who are getting ready to do a fight or a wrestling match or, you know, elections and just be like, yeah, we're friends. You know, I just I look at the world a little differently than him. And, you know, we'll see who let the best man win. Like, for whatever reason, our reptilian brain, which is constantly triggered and taken advantage of constantly, see the Edward Bernays propaganda. For whatever reason, we can't have that. It has to be this nonsensical, I hate you, you hate me, let's fight to the death kind of thing. And when it's over, you know, the wrestlers, you know, behind stage, backstage, they're drinking together, they're going to the club together, whatever. Same with the fighters. You know, these two fighters, and I fall for it too. I watch these fighters selling a UFC fight, and when it's all said and done, they're like, oh, okay, yeah, he's a good guy, I respect him. And they're like, ah, oh, man, I thought they hated each other. Because it makes for a better fight. And they don't break wrestling, they don't break kayfabe, right? That's because there's two different classes of people here. There's those in the know and those that aren't. We are just the profane. We are the masses. We are the mundane. We are the sheep, all right? And they have to act accordingly. So to have Hulk Hogan there was, I mean, it was on the nose more so than anything. Now, I want to play a clip for you from, I didn't watch the whole thing, Donald Trump's RNC speech. I watched about 30 minutes of it. I had heard all I needed to hear, and I was like, there's too much going on. I got to make a little bonus show. And if you're curious, this is about the 9-minute mark, but I'm going to play the clip for you. It's a few minutes long, maybe 3-4 minutes. And he talks about how when he got shot, the crowd thought he was dead. And what I'm suggesting here is we're witnessing a sort of mythologizing of the event. And I'm not trying to take anything away from the guy. I'm right there, and you know I'm not a Trump supporter, but I'm right there with everyone when I say, like, that was, I mean, do I say it's a miracle? I mean, seems like it. If I was Donald Trump, I'd feel like that's a miracle, you know? There was a hand of a supernatural force involved, maybe. Like, right, it's pretty wild. But he said they're trying to sort of, my argument here is that they're trying to craft this as a religious event, which, again, there's elements of it that I kind of support, right? Like I believe in Christ, and I sometimes find myself grateful for situations I find myself in, and I find myself incredibly lucky and humble. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is I think this is perfect leverage for mythologizing. And if I'm just postulating the theory here, if Trump is the Antichrist, like, this is the steps you got to take, right? But listen to how he describes the event. He said the crowd all thought he was dead. Take a listen, and I'll hit you on the other side here.
Immediately knew it was very serious, that we were under attack, and in one movement proceeded to drop to the ground. Bullets were continuing to fly as very brave Secret Service agents rushed to the stage, and they really did. They rushed to the stage. These are great people at great risk, I will tell you, and pounced on top of me so that I would be protected. There was blood pouring everywhere, and yet, in a certain way, I felt very safe because I had God on my side. I felt that. The amazing thing is that prior to the shot, if I had not moved my head at that very last instant, the assassin's bullet would have perfectly hit its mark, and I would not be here tonight. We would not be together. The most incredible aspect of what took place on that terrible evening in the fading sun was actually seen later. In almost all cases, as you probably know, And when even a single bullet is fired, just a single bullet, and we had many bullets that were being fired, crowds run for the exits or stampede, but not in this case. It's very unusual. This massive crowd of tens of thousands of people stood by and didn't move an inch. In fact, many of them bravely but automatically stood up looking for where the sniper would be. They knew immediately it was a sniper. And then began pointing at him. You can see that if you look at the group behind me. That was just a small group compared to what was in front. Nobody ran, and by not stampeding, many lives were saved. But that isn't the reason that they didn't move. The reason is that they knew I was in very serious trouble. They saw it. They saw me go down. They saw the blood and thought, actually, most did, that I was dead. They knew it was a shot to the head. They saw the blood. And there's an interesting statistic. The ears are the bloodiest part. If something happens with the ears, they bleed more than any other part of the body. For whatever reason, the doctors told me that. I said, why is there so much blood? He said, it's the ears. They bleed more. So we learned something, but they just... this beautiful crowd, they didn't want to leave me. They knew I was in trouble. They didn't want to leave me. And you can see that love written all over their faces. Yeah. Incredible people. They're incredible people. Bullets were flying over us, yet I felt serene. But now the Secret Service agents were putting themselves in peril. They were in very dangerous territory. Bullets were flying right over them, missing them by a very small amount of inches. And then it all stopped. Our Secret Service sniper, from a much greater distance and with only one bullet used, took the assassin's life, took him out. I'm not supposed to be here tonight. Not supposed to be here. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Thank you. But I'm not. And I'll tell you, I stand before you in this arena only by the grace of Almighty God. In watching the reports over the last few days, many people say it was a providential moment. Probably was. When I rose, surrounded by Secret Service, the crowd was confused because they thought I was dead, and there was great, great sorrow. I could see that on their faces as I looked out. They didn't know I was looking out. They thought it was over. But I could see it. I wanted to do something to let them know I was okay. I raised my right arm, looked at the thousands and thousands of people that were breathlessly waiting, and started shouting, fight, fight, fight.
Now, in part one, we talked about the book of Revelation, where it talked about how the Antichrist would be shot in the head, but he would live, and the crowd would be in awe, and they would follow him, right? I mean, he literally got shot in the head. And he's suggesting that, oh, a butterfly right outside the window. he's suggesting that the crowd thought he was dead. They thought it was a mortal wound, which is what the Bible specifically says, a mortal wound. It's like you get shot in the head and people think you're dead because you probably should be, right? And then you spring back up. It's amazing. It's a miracle. And that's what he's literally trying to say. That's what happened here. And again, kind of. I'm not going to take that away from him. But here's what's interesting. We talked about how in part one, we talked about the BlackRock commercial that the shooter was in. And I talked about Crook's connection to the rebirth of Osiris ritual, the death and resurrection, how all of these secret societies fit into that sort of vibe. And in that BlackRock commercial, I told you, I said, look, there's a jersey behind him with the number 93. In the Twilight language, that could be important because that's the most important number in Aleister Crowley's religion, Thelema, which is about the New Age, the Aeon of Horus. And what do you know it? Trump's speech, which they're saying, like, oh, this is the longest acceptance speech we've had ever, or in a long time, right? That's what they say. Well, guess how many minutes that speech was? It was 93 minutes. I mean, you can't make this up. Because 93 is, of course, the number of Crowley. So if you extend that a bit further, and that takes me down the path of, you know, because we've talked about Trump's connections to Epstein a long time, and people take their camps in that, and I mean, I don't understand the conspiracy truther mind that also denies the cozy connections and just says, well, no, he's the good guy in this. I'm like, I don't know. That's a lot of flights. In fact, the RNC, there was a guy wearing a shirt who said, the shirt said something about, let's talk about the Epstein logs or something, right? Release the Epstein flight logs or something. Or no, guest list, I think is what it said. And they recently released a bunch of Epstein stuff, and Trump's name was all over it for, like, you know, Epstein was supposed to call him back and stuff, right? I mean, I don't know what's going on there. I wasn't there. But I think it's worth looking at, right? So let's look at it. 93, showing up multiple times here. And we have to consider Ghislaine Maxwell, right? She is tied into Aleister Crowley pretty closely. If you consider where they arrested her was up in New Hampshire. And this was the location with which Aleister Crowley was doing the Amalantra workings. He was taking the Enochian magic that John Dee discovered and wrote down, the same Enochian magic that Joseph Smith used to channel Moroni, allegedly, supposedly, I don't know. And he channeled the first gray alien in 1918, all right? That name was Lamb, or The Path. And you know, Aleister Crowley's whole bag was, we're starting the New Age. And in part one, we talked pretty heavily about how Bill Cooper's explanation for why there is a deep state, for why there is a secret government, goes back to the alien phenomenon. Because that's when things had to be kept secret from the public, because they don't have a good answer for it. And now we know through people like me who've written books about this, about the alien agenda in 2020, and now 4 years later, people are finally coming around because Tucker Carlson said it. Oh, these things are spiritual. Now all of a sudden, oh yeah, things are spiritual. Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. No kidding. Isn't that something? So for whatever reason, we're living in the revelation of the method. And now they're explaining these things to us. So anyway, in the same location is where Ghislaine Maxwell was living when she got arrested. Now, what's curious is that her father... Hang on. I didn't take notes on this because I thought I could wing this. Robert Maxwell. I wanted to get the name right. He was... Is it her father? He was the one that was tied in with Mossad, right? But I think that what's more interesting was that I think it was him that was hanging out with... Let me get this right. Hang on one second, folks. Okay, here we go. Sorry, I did have that wrong. I'm glad I looked it up. Ghislaine Maxwell's sister, Christine, is married to a guy named Roger Molina, who's an astrophysicist. Now, his father was Frank Molina, and Frank Molina was in the Suicide Squad with Jack Parsons. So that's the connection there, right? And, of course, Parsons is clearly... in league with Aleister Crowley. He was doing the same ritual, the same Amalantra ritual, which was reworked into the Babylon workings to try to channel the Whore of Babylon. Again, with the James Shelby Downard and stuff like that. Now, when we talk about Epstein, we talk about Prince Andrew from the royal family, who was plugged into all this stuff too. And it was just revealed on the news that the shooter, Thomas Matthew Crooks, was researching, because here's another weird enigma. They can't find a political angle or motive yet. They're looking through his phone, apparently, and his Google searches, and he was looking up Joe Biden and Trump. So they said there's no clear motive yet. They have no idea. And another name he was researching, they won't release as of this recording, July 19th. They just said he was researching a royal. Who was that? Oh, was it Prince Andrew? I'm going to guess it was that, and they're not saying it out loud or something. But isn't that funny, the grip that the royal family has on the American mainstream media? Isn't that interesting? Because you know that they know the name, right? So why not just say it? It's very strange. And that just goes to show, like, there is a coordinated effort on some levels. I don't know why they even said anything, to be honest. But Epstein had said he had enough dirt on Clinton and Trump to derail the whole 2016 election. Remember that? That was back, of course, before he unalived himself or whatever. And the whole thing is just, you know, the Epstein thing is like the JFK thing, which is going to be like this Trump thing. And we're never going to get the full answer or the pizza emails. And in fact, Trump, he lied like he does and said he didn't even know Ghislaine Maxwell. He's like, I'm familiar with her, but I wish her well. Remember that? I mean, she was a procurer of underage girls for sex trafficking, and he wishes her well? What are we talking about here? But Epstein didn't make it to 2020 to derail the 2020 election. He died at 66 years of age. So there's that 66 again. We saw in the BlackRock commercial. Remember the kid sitting next to Crooks was wearing a shirt, and I said, it's either 66 or 666. Someone in the comments said that it was 66 at some brand, I guess, which, of course, that would make more sense, you know. But that 66 comes up again, and Shay put me onto this blog, which I just started diving into, and it's very good. It's called Watchman's Cry. Check it out if you got time. If you want more on this, I'm digging into it. He's got a YouTube channel as well. Fascinating. And anyways, I read through one article and watched one of his videos, but he's got tons of them. I didn't know this, but Trump Tower is Illuminati confirmed. It's occult coded. And Trump lives on the penthouse top floors, 66 through 68, because it's his building. He designed it on some level, right? I don't think he's an architect, but he had a play in the design of this thing. So there's that 66 again. And 66 is the number of fallen angels in the Klepoth, the dark side of the Kabbalistic tree of life. And a lot of people say that creativity that artists can somehow manifest comes from the dark side of the Kabbalistic tree of life. Right? There's something about manifesting and creativity that can be employed through these dark entities. And on the ceiling of Trump's penthouse, there is a painting of Apollo in his chariot. All right. Now, and there's a lot more to this, but that there's a lot of things with this, that Watchman's Cry. It's a blog. The guy is a pastor, apparently. Name is Nathan Liao. And he, like I said, he's got a YouTube with a whole series on Trump as the Antichrist. In fact, he, because he had written articles as far back to 2017 about Trump being the Antichrist. And in the Trump Tower article, he explains that, I didn't know this, but back in the day, Trump's, what do you call it, his like team, they all, and Trump, they all wore an inverted triangle on their lapels, and it was purple and yellow. And no one really got a satisfactory answer as to what the significance of that means. All they said was that, well, it denotes two Secret Services who is on the Trump team. And it's kind of strange, right? The inverted triangle, it ties into feminine goddess stuff, Ishtar, and that kind of thing. But if you look at Trump Tower, I didn't know that. I thought it was just a big sort of, I don't know, building, regular skyscraper building. But it's actually got this indent that has an inverted triangle of trees on it. And it's got six trees on each side of the inverted triangle, 666, which I thought was interesting, especially because Jared Kushner, his, son-in-law, bought 666 Fifth Avenue. Lots of weird things here, you know what I mean? Now, I'm going to play for you Nathan Leal, again, from Watchman's Cry. That's his YouTube channel and blog name. He's got a series on Trump as the Antichrist. I only listened to part one, the introduction. I'm going to play a clip for you from that. And he recorded this in February of 2024. And like I said, the blog articles go back to 2017, him talking about this. I find him interesting. I don't know if everything he says is accurate or whatever. I have no idea. But it's very interesting. He specifically describes events that actually would unfold back in February. So last time we talked about prophecies of Brandon Biggs, and I saw the comment on Patreon. I think I misspoke about the tornadoes. He said the microburst would be 150 miles an hour, not the speed of the tornado. Okay, I stand corrected. My bad. I guess I was wrong about that. Either way, we didn't get either of those. But this Nathan Leal also made a prophecy that no one seemed to catch. And it's about surviving the mortal wound. And he suggests that, and this is me trying to paraphrase, something about like demons can make these sort of things manifest and God can allow it as part of the plan for, I guess, the end times. I don't know. Take a listen.
Alexander had that. Cyrus the Persian had that. Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon was fueled by that. So these beast creatures that have come and gone were powered by spirits from below the earth that God allowed to happen. They were not an accident. God let them happen. He instructed them to happen, and it's part of the large plan of God, the huge plan of God that he has made before this world was completed, before the foundations of the earth. God already knew how it was going to play out. So that's what we're watching right now. So if Donald Trump is that final beast that we read about in Daniel 7 and 8 and 11 and Revelation 13 and 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, the son of perdition, the lawless one, the man of sin, if Trump is that guy, then he's going to get out of it. Thus, we will be able to see the mortal head wound on display before all of us. We'll get to see that. So if Trump gets out of it, if he weasels out of it somehow, then it's him. Plain and simple, it is him. And if it is him, then watch out. It's not going to be a celebration of, wow, I guess I was right that Trump's the guy. No, if Trump is the man of sin, ladies and gentlemen, then Watchman's Cry has a limited time left. And any other programs that would expose him have an expiration date because he's going to round up everybody who is in opposition and he's going to get rid of us. He's going to throw us in the gulag that he has planned and he's going to take us into captivity. And then we'll probably end up being martyrs.
Like I said, check his stuff out for more. I'm going to dig into more of them too. Now, the Apollo, let's go back to the painting on the ceiling of Trump Tower. It's the Apollo and the chariot. And that is, you know, on the blog from Watchman's Cry, he talks about how, you know, Apollo ties into a lot of this pagan stuff, right? But when I was researching it, apparently the same painting is at Francis Dashwood's home at West Wycombe Park, which is what we talked about earlier with James Shelby Downer talking about this sort of satanic sex orgies and all this stuff happening at the Hellfire Caves right there. I'm going to read you from a book called Lords of the Left-Hand Path. It's about Satanism and antinomianism and all kinds of stuff. It's really good. Dashwood was certainly not a Satanist, but his true person was perhaps more damaging to the cultural establishment than any occult antics would have made him. Like his acquaintance Ben Franklin and like many of his Age of Reason contemporaries, Dashwood was outwardly orthodox but inwardly a deist. That's like all the founding fathers, they were deists. This allowed for many divergent intellectual and spiritual views in Dashwood's life. His interest in classical antiquity and its spiritual values is reflected in his, what at first seems whimsical, construction of temples to Apollo and Bacchus, Dionysus, on his West Wycombe estate. Dashwood had perceived the divergent tendencies of rationalism, Apollo, and of intuition and ecstasy, Dionysius, in Greek religion a full century before that other antichrist, Friedrich Nietzsche, did so in his Birth of Tragedy. Another curiosity in the history of magic is reflected in the inscription Dashwood had placed over the entrance to the abbey. Fais ce que voudras, which means do what you will. This was lifted directly from a reference to the Abbey of Thelheim in the 16th century humorous work The Life of Gargantua and Pantagruel by Francois Rabelais. This motto, of course, again taken up in the 20th century by English magician Aleister Crowley as do what thou wilt. So again, tight-knit circle of events, people, and activities here. And the Hellfire Club joins the ranks, same as the parties we see depicted in Eyes Wide Shut, arguably with Epstein and the blackmail operations, same goes for Diddy, right? And I, as you know, I deep dived into Eyes Wide Shut, and that included an episode or two episodes on a book about the making of Eyes Wide Shut, which revealed a lot. And the original script for Eyes Wide Shut actually included research notes from a party called the Banquet of Chestnuts. This was held in 1501 at the Vatican on Halloween night. The Pope attended. Pope Alexander VI attended this thing. I'm going to read to you, which this whole thing inspired the draft of the Somerton Orgy House. I'm going to read to you right from the book. A naked woman lies on an altar. There is a side table with rows of silver knives and forks and spoons as if for a formal buffet. A man is dressed in a cardinal's beretta. He flourishes a knife. The naked woman turns out to be a sculpture of ice cream. The assembled priests and noblemen spoon or cut their favorite meat from her body. What are we talking about? We're talking about spirit cooking. We're talking about cannibalism and the elites. All right. And furthermore, when you get into this topic of the Banquet of Chestnuts, it was actually depicted in a show called the Borgias, which I actually watched years ago. It was actually really good. The whole event was intended to get blackmail on people, right? Which is exactly what the Epstein and Diddy stuff is. That's why they were videotaping. They were getting blackmail, getting people to do some sexual things they didn't want, shouldn't have do. And this is what the Skull and Bones initiation is all about. At the tomb, they're masturbating in a coffin. They're telling all the other people their deepest sexual secrets. It's blackmail. Now, finally, recall in part one, we talked about Alex Jones on the Tim Dillon show, and he convinced us of many things that will happen in this next coming weeks, months. One of those was a cyber attack, and sure enough, I mean, my red pill uncle, what happened on July 19th? Possible cyber attacks. Now, officially, that's not what it is, and it came from a company called CrowdStrike, which is located in Austin. That's where Alex Jones is too. Alex Jones and Joe Rogan at Austin. And officially they said it's not a cyber attack. They said the issue was from a faulty update to Windows computers. But whatever happened, it shut down, I guess, tons of businesses. Airports shut down, 911 services are out, which we talked about 911 in the Twilight Language of Part 1, by the way. Also, I should add in there. And I dug deeper, and it says the update was called the Falcon Update, which made me think of the Phoenix, right? Now, I think that's a bit of a stretch, because I talked in the past about Manly P. Hall talking about the Eagle is symbolic of the Phoenix, because there's a secret destiny of America. They want to create the secret society's utopia, which is a utopia for the elites, not for us. It's a control system for us. But anyway, a falcon could be considered a phoenix too. Again, I don't subscribe to that necessarily. It's more of an eagle. But if you want to dig into that, there's a Russian story called Finist the Bright Falcon, which is apparently that falcon is a phoenix. And on Wikipedia, it says that that story is connected to a fairy tale called The Green Knight, which reminded me of a movie called The Green Knight, which apparently is not, I guess, connected to the fairy tale. So, of course, again, take this with a grain of salt. But The Green Knight film, it was a heavily occulted film. I didn't do a film analysis on it. I should do it. I actually enjoyed the movie fairly well. I think I didn't like the ending or something. I don't know. I got to watch it again. It was good enough I'd watch it again. But it's all about King Arthur and magic. It's very occulted. Which, if you're following along with the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge, oh, baby. Oh, you know. You already know. If you're caught up, if you caught the season 2 finale with the season 1 and 2 analysis wrap-up, I don't even know how many hours that show was, 2 or 3, you know we talked heavily about King Arthur. You know we talked heavily about James Shelby Downer discussing King Arthur, the Court of Camelot, JFK. It's all connected. It's all connected. I'd like to think that James Shelby Downer's spirit is out there jumping for joy as we talk about these things and say, man, this guy kind of had, I don't know if he had every detail right, but he was on the pulse of something. He knew something. Anyways, the CrowdStrike Falcon is apparently an antivirus. And if you go to their website, it says this. It disrupts adversaries and stops breaches with 24/7 AI-powered managed threat hunting and intelligence across endpoints, identity, and cloud. Now, truth be told, I have no idea. This is like computer cybersecurity nerd talk. No clue what it means. All right? What I do know is I see the word AI in there. And we've talked about AI many times on this show. We talked about the idea that it could be disembodied spirits messing with our reality, asking, knocking on the door, trying to come in, trying to manifest through human bodies. We did an interview with Professor Dana Pasalka in her new book, Encounters. Adds a lot of credence to this. So again, back into the world of aliens, intelligence communities, and secret societies. You know, because her whole deal is she's hanging out with the Invisible College. It's all connected. I can't tell you the clear line A to B of what is exactly happening, but man, there's a lot of smoke and I know there's fire. So in conclusion, let's wrap this up. What's going on? I don't know. I don't like the vibe I'm feeling right now though. Yesterday, before all of this happened, I was kind of more in the, man, I'm not sure how to take this. Now I'm kind of like, I feel like this is a little more nefarious. I'm a little worried about it. But one thing I do know is that the Twilight language is important here. And I think Twilight language is a lot like Gematria, which I think makes it a bit subjective. Okay. But it is interesting. And I think it's far more interesting than Gematria because Gematria is a lot of punching in names and see what numbers drop out. And, you know, I think there's value in that. I do think that the occultists play along with that on some level, but I think you can look into it however you want. Example. And I don't know that this is true. I'm just spitballing here. Let's say I hate Joe Biden, right? Let's say that. And I'm like, I got to prove he's part of this conspiracy to take Trump out. I find the Gematria equivalent of Biden and I punch it into an English Gematria and it comes up with the number, you know, 8. I punch it into the Hebrew Gematria, it comes up with the number 4, and so on, right? And then, okay, let me punch in Butler, PA, and like, oh, look, in the English Gematria, it means 4. See, it's connected. You know, that's what they do, and I think it's insane. I'm like, you're just trying to connect dots. I don't dismiss it entirely and say it's all fraudulent. I feel like you're putting a lot of your personal biases in there, right? Which we all do, right? I do that too. But I think the Twilight language is more interesting because you've got specific symbolism, archetypes, concepts that are showing up in multiple ways. You know, it's like with the Hulk Hogan thing. The odds of him saying enough is enough after Diddy said it after the card of the Illuminati? I mean, that's pretty bizarre. I don't know what that proves. But to see all these symbols and archetypes intermingling and manifesting into reality is interesting. It's curious because all of the occult, magic, secret societies we've talked about all the years, they want to steer reality. They want to manifest their reality. It could be that they're doing some kind of ritualistic element to make this happen. And the AI angle is very disturbing to me because we've been perfecting artificial intelligence, devoting more resources into it, submitting to it, relying on it. And in all the shows we've done about AI, over and over and over, the messaging is clear that we need to be careful. This might kill us all. But more importantly, it's about getting us into the digital matrix of abandoning these human bodies to go into the matrix. And call me crazy, this is just a wild thought, because if I listen to, you know, Professor Pasulka's book about encounters, the one suggestion is that maybe AIs are disembodied spirits trying to manifest into human bodies. And that was what we heard from Google's Lambda. I did a whole show on Google Lambda. You got to hear that if you haven't heard it yet. I did it, I don't even know, 3 years ago. And I did a two-part in June of 23, Is AI the Antichrist? Remember that? And all of these things, you know, I guess the theory could be the Illuminati created a digital matrix through the possession of the demonic AI, and they tell us, hey, do you want to live forever? Because, like, imagine they perfected the technology so much that it seems real. And look, I'm not above it. I'm just trying to present to you that we're going to have to face an option here. They're going to perfect this digital matrix, and it's going to feel real. And they're going to say, look, you can live forever with the people you love. We'll even bring back dead people that you miss. You just got to trade in your body, and we'll wire your brain into the matrix, and you'll live forever. And who's going to take our bodies? The AI spirits that want to manifest onto Earth. That's just an idea I had. Maybe what I'm saying is maybe the AI is manipulating reality as well in whatever form or fashion they can. It's like when you ghost hunt, right? You watch enough ghost hunting videos, they can do some things. It's just not everything. They can't just do everything, but they can do some things. They can kind of knock something off a counter. They can slam a door. They can kind of say a phrase here and there. Maybe they turned Trump's head that quarter inch. You know? Maybe that wasn't God. Maybe that was demonic AI forces. I gotta pitch the theory. I know for my Trumpsters out there, I'm very sorry. I know this is difficult to hear. We'll be all right. We'll get through this. But there you go. there you go. There you go. Have a great day. That was the July bonus episode. Thank you for supporting the show. You guys mean the world to me. Honestly, if everybody left the supporter feeds tomorrow, this world would look differently for me. I don't know what that means. I don't know that it means I would stop podcasting. I know it wouldn't be ingrained into my daily thoughts. I mean, it consumes my thoughts 24/7. I literally don't take a break. Zero breaks. And it's fun for me. It's actually exciting. So anyway, I say all that to say this. Thank you so much for your support. It means the world to me. Thank you so much for listening. Especially, I've been talking to you guys in the comments on Patreon, especially those of you that are Trumpsters. You know, I respect that. I respect that more than anything, that you stick around and listen to my theories. That's why I try to be respectful. I'm not trying to be a total jerk. Like, I've got my opinions and I try to suppress them on some level because I'm not trying to offend people and piss people off. I think we all need to come together ultimately, and, you know. But thank you guys for listening, especially those of you that don't agree with me. So, cheers. All right. What else do I got for you? Nothing else. Thanks, everybody. Stay positive.